Welcome to Hot D, the officially unofficial podcast for House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about the season finale, for season one, The Black Queen. Aaron, what'd you think of this episode?
Man, I'm really curious to see what you think of it, because this is both exactly what I thought this episode would be. You know, this was my two dudes going on a mission, guys? being okay. Hindered by another dude.
No reprisal from the other two dudes, though.
There was some and it also added a bunch of dimensions I didn't expect as a book reader. So I thought it was A+ television. It looked amazing. My God, Vhagar is like some kind of vengeful dark god. Like, it, the way they chose to highlight her size in the storm clouds against Vermithor. That's the one that Daemon was singing to.
Dragon Snack, I think, is the name of that.
Yeah, Kibbles and Bits. Just Vhagar's a monster. You really wonder about that 14-4 strategy when they've got something that massive, and like Daemon's counting like, you know, all three of Rhaenyra's kids' dragons, like, you know, they're something. But what could they do to Vhagar? All three of them at once? My God.
Yeah, I don't know. What was the scene with him going into the dragon den all about, or wherever that was?
You're supposed to understand that, like, so they've got not only their active weaponry, the ones they all have dragon riders, but they have a deep stockpile of dragons, the way that King's Landing does not.
Okay.
So that he was trying to whistle up Vermithor, which is the old dragon of King Jaehaerys. It's about
That's pretty 100. Big dragon.
Yeah, it's I guess it'd be in its like late middle age, but in its prime. It's huge and powerful, and it's not necessarily old or slow. So, I thought that they illustrated it as if it was very old. Like, I thought that dragon looked kind of ancient and hoary in the way that Vhagar does. But
yeah, I think so. It seems formidable, certainly. I think like Team Black has some power on their side, quite a bit of power, you know, to maybe face off with Vhagar. But I don't know, man. I thought this episode was awesome. I love the dragon stuff. I thought it has never looked better with the dragon stuff. It had me a little shaky when Rhaenyra landed on the bridge, because I'm like, well, it still has that like washed out look that all this dragon effect stuff does. But by the time they got into the sky at the end, I wasn't seeing that. I was just seeing a couple of real dragons on the screen, and it was badass.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it definitely helps that it's got that storm and rainy conditions. But then, like, you know, when they pop up above the cloud cover, it was just such a beautiful shot, too. You know, we talked about the one thing Rings of Power had over House of the Dragon consistently almost all season long was just the visuals, how bright and beautiful and just jaw-dropping they were. But, like, some of the best dragon work, I thought, approached the wonder of, like, the two trees of Valinor. You know, seeing Numenor for the first time. So hats off to the VFX team. And this is like, I thought as a book reader, you know, I thought they'd get a little bit further. I thought it'd be paced a little bit quicker. So that we'd spent some time to see, you know, how the other prince fared on his missions. It'd been cool to see him treat with the Lord of Stark. See this, Grover, this Muppet we've been hearing about. But, they did what they needed to do, which I think in the episode with a real bang, with a real vengeance shot on Rhaenyra, and having Team Black howling for blood. And they gave Team Green some, like, well, you know, Aemon didn't mean for it to happen. I thought that was such an interesting angle, because that is absent from the book.
Yeah, this is a dragon war at this point. Yeah. This isn't even a human war. It's the dragons drew first blood, and I did not call that. You were asking me like earlier, when do you think it's going to kick off? Who's going to start it? And I'm like, well, I don't know who's going to start it, but it kicks off at first blood, and apparently the dragons are going to start it.
Yeah, because when you read the book, you're like, Aemon just, in fact, they have this story that like the reason Aemon does this is because one of the Baratheon girls insults him. You know, because he's like, oh, you know, did the prince take your balls along with your eye? And that enraged Aemon so much, he grabbed up on Vhagar and went and chomped on Luke there.
Wow.
But the fact that the dragons decided, like, the like you had these young, inexperienced riders on these willful dragons, the dragons got their blood up and did something crazy, kind of like these Targaryens do. It's I kind of liked it. I really liked it.
And it adds a wild card element for the coming war. When I pair this with what was it Rhaenyra or Rhaenys that said it? I can't remember. But these dragons are not battle tested, right?
Right.
Most of them. Mm-hmm. And so, like, the idea that they would get into battle and then just disobey commands and go buck wild is there first and foremost in my mind at this point. And
yeah,
I'm kind of thinking they'll do something with that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a completely unexpected angle, but I thought it was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I got so many different thoughts. I thought just talking about the look of things. I want to ask you whether you thought stuff was cool or cringe. Sometimes we play this game. Okay. Painted table glowing from underneath. Cool or cringe?
Fucking awesome. I thought that was the coolest thing.
Holy shit, that was so cool. And that neat little candle tray that kind of like prisms up everything. Oh, so
and
cool.
The painted table is already badass.
Yes.
Just like with the shape of it and its use and its look. But then you light it up and it's like, oh, a whole other dimension of awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, now it's got RGB lighting enabled.
What? Yeah, it gets wildfire under there, glow it green, sure.
What about Daemon singing to the dragons to kind of like get them used to the idea of someone riding them?
Cool or cringe? I liked it. I wouldn't say it's either.
Let me ask you this as a non-book reader. What did you think they were doing with the pupils like matching up?
I mean, your mind to my mind. They're doing a lot of Star Trek stuff here, right?
You're assuming that Daemon's like mind melding to this dragon?
Maybe, but he already has a dragon, so I don't know how he really could.
But see, this is what I'm talking about. Like, there's an opportunity. They might just do something fucking wild, crazy. Like, dragons can be bound to more than one rider.
Like
now.
Jean-Claude Van Damme, Daemon's going to be riding two dragons doing the splits down the highway.
Well, you know, I was just thinking it would actually be way more useful to have one dragon bound to multiple riders, probably. Than to have one rider bound to multiple dragons. Because, yeah, you need backup pilots, but you only have the one dragon. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I was like, what the fuck are they trying to tell us here? This is...
Well, if I lose my dragon, I want a backup. But that's a big dragon to have as, like, sitting on the bench. You want that dragon in the game,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you want... In fact, you might talk to kids and they'll be like, hey, you know, I know you're really attached to Arax, Taraxes and all that, but Vermithor.
How about Old that Vermithor?
King Jairus, you know? it's dragon story.
Yeah.
Silverwing, you know? I thought that was really cool. What about Aemon's sapphire eye? Cringe or cool?
Cool. I might be in the minority here, but I thought it was cool.
I thought it was cool. I thought they pulled it off. I was one of the details because a lot of times when Game of Thrones has some kind of just really fucking crazy detail, like, oh, there's Dario Naharis and he's got a gold painted mustache with a three forked purple beard, and he wears like makeup like a and he's got a gold tooth.
Yep.
And he's just got in, you know, and they're like, you see Dario Naharis, and no, he's just a scruffy little pirate boy, right?
Yeah,
they went full on fucking sapphire eye. I thought that looked badass. I thought that was a swing and a knock out of the park. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting that Jim called all three of these cool because I thought like maybe we'd be lucky to get two out of three. But
really?
All right.
Well, yeah. I said the second one was neither. It was like the singing isn't cool, but it's definitely not cringe.
Okay.
It's like,
okay. 2.5 out of three. 2.5 out of three.
No perfect scores here.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed all the talky scenes, like all the scenes of them planning the war and like saying, okay, who's going to be leading this thing, right? Because I think Daemon early on is jockeying to be like the military commander here, and it makes a lot of sense. He does have the most experience, but also he's not great at it. He got his ass kicked in the Stepstones.
Yeah,
until he did some again. Hail Mary, should have got you killed, should never have worked kind of play.
Agreed.
Yeah, so I don't know that I want him leading the armies. But
also, what the fuck was he doing choking up Rhaenyra?
I guess that's the one scene I don't get.
Was he enraged that his brother kept a secret from him? Was he enraged that, like, we're going to, you know, my brother was kind of, I had to put up with my brother being this moon boy dreamer, and my wife is going to do this shit too? Was it?
Yeah, probably that.
And
then she says, he must have never told you about it. And I think that's true. Which, how is that true? But
I thought that was a wild scene. Mm-hmm. That didn't make a ton of sense to me.
Yeah. And then they just go back to normal. Like it's nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, also there's another crazy scene in this, and it's the birth scene, the third birth scene that is just completely fucked, right? A fourth.
It's interesting how they bookend this material that you had her mother like dying at birth here. She has, and this is also something interesting because this is right out of the book too. The fact that Rhaenyra gets this news while she is, you know, trying to give birth to her daughter. I think first and only, which is interesting. And I thought they made a lot of that material that they book into these different difficult births and how Rhaenyra is just like fighting this like a boxing match against her fetus. You know, she's like just screaming, get out of me, get out of me. Yeah. Very fucking intense. And it's also, you know, when she had to, like, you know, get out and march across the castle to show off Joff, it feels like this season's like a Rocky movie, and there's been all these birthing training montages. Like Rhaenyra's worked up to where she can lead an anti-rebellion, a counterinsurgency, right after she has a difficult stillbirth.
Yeah, yeah, it was wild.
Did you get the idea?
I'm glad it didn't sideline her all episode. I was worried about that when they started in with this. I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, I thought there might be.
And she's going to be absent.
Like this Daemon as a Shadow King kind of business because she's waylaid. And what was your impression of Rhaenyra's daughter that died, looked like it had the umbilical cord wrapped around its head? Was there anything you noted of it?
I just thought it was too young to survive. Okay. Just gotcha. Not developed enough. Did it come out with like the mark of the beast or something? Should I have noticed?
Okay, so here's normally I've been having the habit of reading the book right before, you know, like a half hour before the show, I go and I thumb through the pages and read what I think is going to happen. This week I decided not to do it because I did see the next week on and I knew that they were going to probably end on this big note. And I'm like, you know what? I don't know that I want. I don't think it's fair to the show if I have fresh in mind, because that's like one of the better. That's like, you know, this is one of the things when I was reading, I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, this is going to be. Can you imagine seeing this on screen? Like, you know, Vhagar coming out of this raging storm and just chomping this dragon, and it's like the prince, and like fucking Rhaenyra is going to go ape shit. And I thought they also did a very good job of both showing that Rhaenyra was kind of like trying to manage this like a crisis and not treat it. It's like, you know, treating like a war kind of plays into the queen and this fake king's phrase, you know, like kind of it buys into their playbook, right? No, this is just some bullshit that I've got to manage through. And I wondered if it would have worked if she'd have been able to consolidate, if Aemon doesn't lose his mind and try to scare this prince, do you think it works? Do you think Rhaenyra, because I feel like she was really on her way to sewing up like 4 of the 7 big houses, probably getting a fifth eventually. She had the fleet of the Valyrians behind her, 14 to 4 dragons.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still, I mean, without. Was it Baratheon who Luke went to
who talked the mad shit? Yeah,
That was Baratheon. So yeah, even without the Baratheons, I feel like they have a really good odds in their favor.
Yeah, and that's the storm. That's right next to the Crownlands. I mean, that's like, you know, that's very cosmopolitan King's Landing.
Yeah, just owning the Stepstones, I feel Corliss made the case for that being super important. They can cut off King's Landing, effectively siege King's Landing, because they have air superiority and they have water superiority. And there is no approach from land to Dragonstone. So
right. That's why I thought it was cool.
You can't really get at them.
There's a lot of stuff that Daemon said that's a little, like, verbatim, like the maester that's writing the book Fire and Blood takes like an aside to the reader and is like, here's the military disposition of how Rhaenyra, and it's like word for word, okay. Like, you know, I've got this many knights and this many mounted, and yeah. Dragonstone, of course, is easy to defend, but it's as a launching of an invasion point that leaves a lot to be desired, because there's just nothing there. You don't have any, there's no landed nothing, right. You know, no knights, no banners, no nothing really.
I guess I want a better perspective. They gave me a lot of stuff about the Stepstones early on in this season and how important it was, but they just kind of told me they didn't really like sell maps to me how you can cut off a continent by controlling one sea passage. I get that you're not going to get supplies from Essos, but Westeros is a big fucking place with a lot of riches, a lot of wealth, a lot of supplies. I don't necessarily know why the Stepstones are the key to a siege at King's Landing.
Well, it cuts off entirely half of Essos, because those Stepstones kind of bisect Essos, the continent, and like you have to trade with Westeros, the 4 to 5 cities that are on the south side of Essos just cannot pass that. But the other thing is, King's Landing is in the mouth of this, at the mouth of the Blackwater. It's at this, like, you know, big mouthwater bay, like the Chesapeake Bay or something. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's relatively easy if you control the Stepstones and indeed the narrow sea. It's relatively easy to just choke that off. So,
yeah,
like,
but why can't they deliver supplies and wealth and stuff from the land, the other side?
Because it's a medieval
King's
society,
Landing.
And, like, they don't have like trains or semis. Like, you can land a bunch of shit and wagon it over, I suppose, but like the infrastructure is not.
Just take the fucking King's Road.
I don't think the infrastructure is there.
The like, gold will make it to King's Landing.
If you need 500 ships a day coming in and out of port to supply the city, and suddenly they have to land 150 miles away and wagon it, yeah. That's going to cause problems in King's Landing, is I think what you're supposed to understand. Especially
yeah.
since.
I don't
especially
think
since
fatal,
also
but
you got the queen that never was patrolling, and I guess like what she's going to limit, like attack those supply chains, but
yeah, I would assume so.
Yeah, the war going forward strategy is going to be really interesting. You know, like mm-hmm. how do you best use dragons? How do you supply? How do you, you know, if you don't have air support superiority, how do you supply your troops? How do you move them around? And that's like yes,
yeah.
Well, I said, I thought they did such a good job of making the Greens' victory seem so secure, because like Otto said, you know, it's mm-hmm. another kind of quote right out of the movie. He's got the, you know, Conqueror's crown, the Conqueror's sword. He's sitting on the Conqueror's throne, and he has a Conqueror's name, and he was sworn for a blah, blah, blah. Those are such it's like the when Varys was telling the parable of who has the power. You know, mm-hmm. it's like there's a sellsword and a rich man, a priest, and a king tells him to kill the other. Like, who does he listen to? I thought this mm-hmm. was such a great object lesson, because, you know, who has more power? And then they're like, well, Team Black has more dragons, but then Jesus, Vhagar. It's such a great way to end the season. I saw a lot of Team Black supporters in chat saying, like, who could possibly support Team Green at this point? Man, you know, like I live in a very, very blue part of Cincinnati, and there's a couple of neighbors that flew the Trump flags. Mm-hmm. And I know some liberal friends that live in very ultra infrared areas of the country and flew like Bernie Biden stuff. There's no matter how dogged the resistance, you will have some people that just say, no, fuck you. I'm Team Green till I die. And yeah. I also thought they gave him a little bit of moral cover with Aemon kind mm-hmm. of like, you know, he's just fucking with them the way that they fucked with him. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to say, as a book reader, I don't know why they just don't have Aemon kill him, because Aemon is like cool like that. I kind of liked Aemon a little bit less after this episode, because he threw the rock and he tried to hide his hand. Like, Yeah. Oh, fuck. I didn't mean for this to happen. What the fuck? You set a 747 size dragon on a Cessna. What do you think was going to happen? And a 14-year-old boy trying to fly it at that. Because honestly, Luke lost control of the dragon first. Like, what's this pissant dragon Spitfire in Vhagar's face? I don't know. I don't know who calls her back.
I don't know if an eight-year-old comes up and punches you in the leg as a 40-year-old man. I'm not going to just blast him back.
But this is a dragon. Okay. In the news right now, there's like this 3 or 4 little girl that like beats her chest in front of this dragon that's in this glass cage at a zoo. And this fucking gorilla charges. Gorilla charges her and like cracks the glass and is like, oh. That gorilla don't give a fuck. That's a 4-year-old girl. That gorilla's thinking, what the fuck is this naked ape beating her chest at me? She thinks she can take me?
Yeah.
Fuck her. You know, like, that's, yeah, it's like, the dragons aren't diplomatic. Oh, my God.
Come on, dragons. Come on.
Dragons going to dragon, Jim.
It's true. It's true.
There's still lots of hot D left to talk about. We'll be right back after the break.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
And now, back to Hot D.
Yeah. God, what a great episode. What'd you think of the callback to the torn page?
Nymira. So she hung on to this book, this page from this book, for 20 plus years?
Kept in her keepsake box.
What was the significance? Rhaenyra? I I don't remember the significance of that page, like the actual scene. I remember
so
they showed it in the
early on. It might even been in the first episode. Allison's kind of scolding Rhaenyra for being so lax about
enough.
Her schooling.
Yeah,
and Rhaenyra like effortlessly recites the things supposed after you know giving her a bunch of grief, and I believe she tore the page out and to give to Allison is kind of like here's something to remember it by, and Allison's like, oh my god, what would the Septa say? And she's like, fuck the Septas. It kind of like as an early framing of their. Allison's very duty and what you're supposed to do, and Rhaenyra is all about very much so like fuck it, I don't give a shit. The fact that she's held on to that, I don't know. I think it says something about the love that Allison had and probably still has a little bit for Rhaenyra.
Oh man, actions speak louder than pages torn out of a book, in my opinion. And she's been using the last 20 years to prepare her kids for a war that she believes is coming and doing nothing to prevent it. So I have a hard time getting on her side. But yeah, clearly she doesn't want this to escalate, but how can she expect it not to?
What did you think the terms that Team Green gave to Team Black? Did you keep track of like, did this sound generous to you or?
I mean, you get to keep what you have essentially, and we'll give your kids positions of some honor.
Yeah,
but
Squire
Cupbearer
seemed pretty strong, and that's her, you know, Daemon kids, they're trueborn, so they're offering legitimize her children.
Yeah, I couldn't help but notice Driftmark, he calls them trueborn now, right? Now that the deed's done,
they're trying to get the piece of shit. Like it
fuck
felt like
why did Jacaris them all on that bridge? Honestly, fuck them. Yes, I'm one of the men in the room who's talking about going to war.
Yeah.
Because honestly, fuck Otto. Fuck. Yeah. I want to see it, A, because it's more action-packed. It's going to be awesome. And I'm a television watcher.
I was hoping that we would have our merch printers sent us two t-shirts, the Keep an Allele t-shirts, Team Green and Team Black. I was hoping to get them in for they didn't. They didn't get to us in time. Jim Harris has got a Team Green shirt through some kind of mishap.
Joke.
Some kind of raven got crossed in the mail. I got a Team Black and he got a Team Green shirt. And that's gonna be pretty funny to see him wear that. But because you're just so pro black, man.
I'm gonna have to get like a filter on my camera or something that can change green to black so I can wear the shirt and not feel like some kind of turncoat, some traitor.
God. You probably could just put a green screen filter and just paint it out for black. That'd be a funny one. That'd be a funny one.
That's the plan. Can I say, I think Rhaenyra is incredibly naive sending Luke out to treat with a potential ally that you know has already received an offer from your enemy, a generous offer at that.
Because he's so close.
This was incredibly stupid of her. And I saw it coming a mile away. I was like, well, he's never coming back from this mission.
I think you're supposed to understand that Rhaenyra did not think, since the dragon advantage is so huge, I think she thought, and there's a little bit more of interior this in the book, that like, surely they've got Vhagar. They will make sure that stays behind to defend King's Landing. Because the most natural reaction is for me to take my overwhelming dragon advantage over there and just kick your asses in right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you have to be ready for me to do my craziest thing, right? The fact that like, it seems like they kind of left King's Landing vulnerable.
The crazy thing here is that,
and she's like, this is just across the narrows, this is just like not it's almost as close as King's Landing. For a dragon is just slightly further, so she's like, this is in her backyard, no fucking way they're gonna have Vhagar over there. I felt it was defensible.
Well, I mean, to even send your heir, your son, whatever, to a potential enemy who's just received a big offer, to me, like, it's not about the dragon being there. To me, it's more about like, what is Baratheon gonna do?
Yeah.
What's Boros gonna do? Because that's the best way to get your kid imprisoned at the beginning of a war, or worse. I don't know. It seemed naive and silly.
Yeah.
But she was hoping for the best.
What else have we got? I just thought there's so many smart calls. This is such a well-constructed season finale because it called back so many things previous to the season, like Otto meeting at the bridge to Dragonstone and trying to deliver terms, mm-hmm. and you know, Rhaenyra flying in at first with no standing there against the will of the king, and now she is queen. She's got the golden crown, and I thought that was so fucking cool.
Yeah, that scene when Black Twin pulls the crown out of his bag. I'm like, oh yeah, oh yeah,
fucking Kingsguard Eric. What that's so awesome. I did think Daemon. I don't think that's how you treat professionals. I thought he disrespected us Kingsguardmen. I don't know if I like that. It's like,
renew your oath or get burnt. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you just, like, you know, be like, hey, if anyone has. I mean, first of all, why would you do that with the dragon in front of you? Why don't you just be like, hey, man, look, if you don't want, like, this is all in the beginning, cards on the table. Are you cool with Rhaenyra being queen? Because if you're not, you know, well, I'll get you a boat, send you across the king, and then let them declare and then kill them if they don't. Why would you make it clear to them they're going to die right here and right now? It's like, Daemon, come on. That's stupid.
Yeah, what
that's
answer stupid. Are you going to get out of them? Right?
Yeah.
That's the thing, Daemon.
Like, that doesn't make sense, and neither is grabbing your wife by the throat and squeezing because you don't like what she's saying. Like, that's fucking crazy shit. That's indefensible behavior. Mm-hmm. That's Daemon. That's Daemon in a nutshell. Problematic fave. What else? Do we have anything else that we need to talk about? Oh, what do you think about Corlys coming back?
I was surprised he could speak as well as he could.
I thought, if I'm a nitpicker looking to pick a nit, he miraculously recovered. He goes from, I can barely talk because my windpipe was slashed by a pirate, apparently, to, well met, Queen Rhaenyra. Our house is going, like, you know, come on. Come on, man.
Yeah. Miraculous recovery.
Yeah.
But I liked him having a change of heart here. You know, Rhaenys talks to him, says, hey, you abandoned me when I needed you most. And he's like, yeah, well, I had my own shit going on. And she's like, no, we had shit going on. This, we're supposed to be in this together, right? That's the thing. So, yeah, no, it was great couple of scenes there. And I really like having him back, too.
I appreciate Lord Corlys being in solidarity with me, insisting on calling his wife Rhaenys. He croaked it out, but he did say Rhaenys this episode. Right. He's been very consistent. Like, 75% of the time, he's Rhaenysing it up, and I appreciate that about Lord Corlys. all right. What did you think of, I guess, what did you think of the Baratheon guy? Like, how bold as brass he was. Like, he was gleefully Team Green.
Yeah, but I liked him. I mean, I don't know. He seemed like a Baratheon to me. They got an actor who felt like he could be an ancestor of Robert. Both in look and stature and presence. Yeah.
The seed is strong, yeah. And he can't read. That's such a great detail.
Oh, is it because he can't read? Yeah. I thought he was like, it was beneath him to read the message of this traitor.
That was my understanding when he grabs and he kind of looks at it. He's like, where's the bloody maester? Like, yeah, I think you're supposed to. And I think that's not uncommon of lords at that time. Like, you know, unless you take the time to educate yourself, that's why you have a maester.
And you got Jace, who's going to speak two languages.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, he's really they're not going to get apart. Along. I thought Storm's Inn looked really cool, too. It's the first time we've really seen the outside of it, and a little bit more towery than I thought it would be, but looked cool. Looked like a miserable place to live with all them storms, ending or not. They're just always beating on you. Okay. Do you have anything else you want to talk about, or should we kind of shift things into an instant talk type of portion? I'm sure.
Yeah, let's do
it. We have a frightfully large number of people here in the club that are in the chat. Yeah. So this is, we want to give plenty of time for people's reactions. If you couldn't watch us live, or for whatever reason you had some long form takes you wanted to give to us, please send that in to hotd@baldmove.com, because we will, of course, have a feedback episode out Thursday. We'll have our main podcast out Tuesday. We'll also have a season wrap up. For last thoughts, and you know, I'm gonna, you know, be doing the rounds, looking to see what the showrunners have to say, looking at some, you know, making of material, and seeing what people are saying about season 2, and Just seeing what people are thinking, like non-book readers, where they're at, riling up Team Green and Team Black one more time. So there's lots more to talk about. HotD@baldmove.com. Please follow us at Twitter at twitter.com/baldmove to follow along with all of our releases. And if you want to get in on these live instant chats, instant talks, and get lots more bonus audio content and ad-free feeds, check it out. support.baldmove.com. All right, everybody, all the club members, let's see what you guys are saying.